Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Championship Sunday here on the Saskatchewan Rough Riders Radio Network. I'm Michael Ball, along with three-time Grey Cup champion Paul Waldo, and this is why you play the game, a chance to go to the Grey Cup. On the line, a berth in the 107th Grey Cup. Going on right now in the Steel City, the Hamilton Tiger Cats taking on the Edmonton Eskimos in the East Final, with the Tabbies up late in the first, 10-0. And then this afternoon at Mosaic Stadium, for just the third time in the modern era of football, the Riders and the Winnipeg Blue Bombers will meet in the CFL Western Championship. And for what it's worth, the Rough Riders have only finished first once and won a Grey Cup in the same year. That was 1966, when that year they beat the Winnipeg Blue Bombers in a it was a best of three, but they took two games from the Bombers that year in 1966. Coming up, we got a jam-packed show with our regular cast of characters, Brendan Tam and Jason Claremont, Luke Molitor, Darian Durant. We'll hear from a provincial-winning football player from the Leboldus Golden Suns. His grandfather used to be on these airwaves, Lauren Harrison. Yeah, Mark Harrison will join us. We're also going to hear from our buddy Paul Waldo as he sets the stage for today's epic battle, the Saskatchewan Rough Riders and the Winnipeg Blue Bombers from Mosaic Stadium. This is the Western Final, and this is the Countdown to Kickoff Show on the Saskatchewan Rough Riders Radio Network. And the province of Saskatchewan, all of Rider Nation, pumped for this one today. For the first time in 10 years, the Riders will host a Western Championship. They take on the Winnipeg Blue Bombers just after 3:30 here at Mosaic Stadium. It's overcast, but we're expecting a game time high of 4 degrees Celsius, which for November 17th is spectacular. I'm Michael Ball, along with Paul Waldo. We'll get to Waldo in a second. On the Winnipeg Blue Bombers sideline today, our old pal Dalby from the afternoon drive show on our sister station, The Wolf, the station I work at. He's going to be patrolling the Winnipeg sidelines. And part of this and part of the atmosphere is trash talking, and we know we love to trash talk the Blue Bombers. Well, the Blue Bombers got here with a very impressive dismantling of Bo Levi Mitchell and the Calgary Stampeders. Dalby always does a segment on Derek Taylor's show, The Sports Cage, called DSPN. So I thought we'd roll that Dalby with DSPN.
It's Bombers v. Stamps, with a winner heading to Regina for the West Final as the Winnipeg players channel their energy to build a force field around what's left of Zach Caleros. Bo Levi Mitchell under center as Calgary looks for a hot start to this game. He's got time and looking deep, finally unleashing a bomb downfield. Huff is there, but the pass is off target. Close enough, though, that Huff draws a penalty with a swan lake dive into the end zone. On the goal line after the penalty, and Mitchell is going to hand the ball to Bageltown, and he's just going to shrug off the defenders trying to toast him and punch it in for a touchdown. Calgary strikes first at home. Calgary with the ball again, looking to extend the lead early. Bobo looking to the middle, throwing inside the 10, and it's caught, but it's caught by two players at once. That should mean the receiver gets the catch. Bombers are looking for a freebie turnover, but surely the officials know better. Never mind. They're going to call that an interception. Sure, why not? Winnipeg still not on the board, but they have Calgary pinned deep, and the pressure is coming for Bo Levi Mitchell. He's terrified and just throws it away like the 2017 Grey Cup, but he's in his own end zone. That's his safety, and that's 2 points for Winnipeg. Jerome on the return for Calgary makes a man miss, and he's got some room. He's heading to the right side. This could be huge for Calgary. This could be a touchdown. He's across midfield, and he's just going to casually jog out of bounds. Huh. Teammates are congratulating him on the sidelines. Probably could remind him, though, that this is a contact sport. Bo Levi Mitchell going back to Bageltown, and it's a four-cheese trot around the corner to a delicious toasted touchdown. Winnipeg has chipped their way back into the lead here, and they're looking to ice it. Dropping back, looking deep on the near side. He's got Adams over top of Trey Roberson. It's caught, and Smith was so impressed by the throw, he decided to let Adams walk around him, and it's touchdown Bombers. And Caleros risking life and limb now just by running down the field. One last chance for Mitchell to save the day, and his line is blocking their asses off all the time in the world. Just enough time to throw another brutal interception. Mastin has it, and he's pulling the old Madden dick move, just running around trying to kill the clock, while Mitchell tries to figure out which referee to blame this peewee performance on. The Bombers are going to Regina, but at least Calgary will get to watch the Grey Cup at home from the good seats.
Yeah, there you go. Dalby with ESPN does a great job. He'll be on our sidelines for the Blue Bombers. I'll be patrolling the Rider sidelines for this West Final. Three-time Grey Cup champ Paul Waldo sitting next to me. Nice to work with you for change. I thought you forgot about me there.
Yes, never.
Busy with your Huskies. We're watching the Hamilton game. Did they score again? It's 10-0 last
they
I saw.
Kicked the field goal.
So it's 13-0 Hamilton. Edmonton's hanging around. We're going to be joined by Brendan Tamman in a second, but just your initial thoughts on this one. The juices are flowing, I can tell, looking at you.
It's I almost feel like I'm playing.
Yeah.
So that's how excited I am. No, and I mean, the weather is great to host it, at home. I mean, I just go back and I think about 2013 when we were hosting
the semifinal.
As cold as it was that day, the place was rocking. It's going to be electric. It's going to be live.
Yeah. What do you make of this Cody thing? A couple days ago, Coach said he's gonna play, but he might not start. Like, we might use all three quarterbacks.
Right.
And I'm like, well, if your MOP can play, why wouldn't he start? So he's got to be really hurt. But then he came out yesterday and said he'll start, and looks like he'll be good to go. So I don't know what it is, but obviously he's not going to be 100%. But then again, nobody is at this time.
And especially not at this time of the year. And that kid's pretty tough. So you got two left.
Yeah.
You got all offseason to rest. They'll find a way. Shoot it up. Do what you got to do. But hopefully.
We're watching this game out of town here. Hamilton's leading 13-0. Edmonton with Tavares Daniels just moves it into Hamilton territory.
Yep.
What do you do? What do you do at quarterback next year? How do you? Because you've got Dane Evans under contract, but how do you? With a cap-friendly deal, but how do you get Jeremiah Masoli to kind of sign on the dotted line for 1 year?
Around. It depends on what the staff feels like is going to be best moving forward for that football team. You got Dane Evans at an insanely gross discount for a guy who's won 15 games all year, right? So it just kind of depends on what situation they want to move. You know, you have a guy who you're probably paying $1.25 to, as opposed to someone who I think was making around that $500,000 mark, right? So it just depends on, like I said, it depends on who the coordinator is, what the head coach thinks, and if they're going to be moving forward. I mean, I don't think there's much discussion for anything.
We got lots to get to here, but let's head out on the Mr. Lube hotline, where you can get fast, warranty approved, top to bottom maintenance at any of the four Mr. Lube Regina locations. Let's talk to Brendan Tamman from the boardroom. All right, just ahead of getting a hold of Brendan Tamman, they're at the end of the first quarter in Hamilton. It's 13-0 now for the Hamilton Tiger Cats over the Edmonton Eskimos. And just before we head on the hotline, I want to give a shout-out to my uncle, Harold,
who just got
brought into hospital with a little bit of a pneumonia.
Oh, no.
I don't know, can you have a little bit of a pneumonia?
No, yeah, that's
but,
pretty
he's a giant of a man. He loves the Riders, and he loves listening to our show. So
nice.
get well soon there, Uncle Harold. I'll come in and listen to some of your great stories this
week,
maybe.
Okay,
so let's hopefully we have a story here to talk about for this game. And Brendan Tamman joins us now. He's been a GM of both teams. Brendan, I said earlier this week, this stadium is a great stadium, but it lacks character. It lacks stories. This might be one where we look back and say, hey, this was a character-defining game for this stadium. Do you feel that way?
Yeah, providing Saskatchewan wins, for sure.
Yeah, right.
If they lose, it ain't going to be anything to remember, so... you're right. I think that's the first big game they've had there other than last year's semi, but a final is a different level, as you guys know. So
that's
a possibility of really being a defining moment for sure.
Okay, so you've been behind the shroud of secrecy before. One thing I like about Craig Dickinson is he's an open book. He's very transparent. He doesn't seem like he'd ever throw anybody off the scent. He tells you when guys are hurt. He actually tells you what the injury is. He doesn't say lower upper body injury. And Cody Fajardo is honest as the day is long too.
Right.
So a few days ago, Coach said to Brendan that he said that, Cody will play, but we're not sure if he's going to start, which really raised my eyebrows. Like, okay, if your MOP is going to play, but he's not going to start, is he really going to play, and how much is he going to play, okay? And then yesterday he said Cody's good to go. He's going to start. We expect him to be effective or something to that that effect. How does it change in 2 days like that, and is he trying to throw everybody off the scent?
It doesn't. The game plan on the message does, is what happens. So last week, you remember, Strebler was going to basically be on a gurney and couldn't ever get near the field to play, right?
Right.
Well, you saw what happened there. You know, he comes out to warm up and he's limping like a shot dog, and he ends up playing very well. So
very well.
I don't put a lot of credence in any of that information, to be honest with you. Only certain people know it. But, I mean, it sounds like the injury is fairly significant on Fajardo. I haven't heard that he's been full practice. You know, he's been limited. And when I hear that, it's like, uh-oh, he's going to give it a go and see what he can do. But I don't think he's 100%. That's obvious, I think.
So when you look at it that way, how do you, and I'll ask both of you guys this, we'll start with you, Paul, how do you think the Riders approach this on offense with Cody? Will we see a different mentality? Because you got to remember, Winnipeg is unbelievable against the run.
I mean, yeah, they're incredibly good against the run. That's I mean, they're just good defensively in every area. So it's kind of one of those things where I don't know if you start with Cody, see how he does. I mean, if he looks like he's quite limited, then you start moving stuff around, or maybe they have packages like Winnipeg would have last week with two different quarterbacks, right? At certain times in certain situations. But I guess those are just depend on how he can make out.
Brendan, how about you? How do you think the Riders approach it offensively today?
Well, the guy I've always thought is the most valuable on their team is William Powell. I think he has to be a huge part of what they do today, and if he's not, they're going to struggle. I think you can ask Cody to scramble around and do what he does very well, and he does it okay. I think his ability to throw the ball is going to be a little bit affected if everything we sort of know is true, but I think William Powell becomes a huge part of what success is going to play out there.
You know, though, Paul, he only threw about 10 to 15 passes that we saw every practice and really about 15 yards downfield, the maximum. So even if he doesn't throw deep, though, this injury will affect, and we'll talk to Darian a bit about this a little later on, it's going to affect accuracy. It's going to affect timing when the ball comes out, too, right? That's going to be something Winnipeg will key on.
I think even just mentally as a quarterback, you know what I mean, you always want to be able to finish your throwing motion and be able to step into the pocket and strike, and I think that might be a little limited based on the type of pressure he has and how the pocket collapses. And you know for a fact he's probably not going to be as mobile either. So it's going to affect him for sure.
William Powell has never had a 100-yard rushing game in the playoffs, which is interesting. Like I said, the Bombers, it's like 67 yards they're allowing on average on the ground, and the next closest team is 30 yards away. But, Brendan, this offensive line for the Riders has never been better. You got Brendan Labatt, who's basically fresh now because he's coming back midway through the year. Blake is back. Clark in the middle of the All-Star. You got Vaughn and Coleman. So, you know, the Riders do have a nice line to combat the Bombers front there.
Yeah, no question. I think, you know, if you look at last week, you get, and this is true for any game, really, you get pressure on a quarterback that's going to unsettle a lot of things. So I think it's really important for both sides to get pressure on each quarterback. And I think with Winnipeg, unless it's Strebler playing, you know, Claros isn't going to move much. Cody will, I'm sure. But I think watching Hughes and Jefferson this game is going to be really interesting because they're going to be under the gun to play very well.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a really good matchup there for sure. When you look at Willie Jefferson, led the CFL with 16 pass knockdowns, a record for D linemen, and 6 forced fumbles. Charleston Hughes became the oldest player ever to lead the CFL in sacks at 35. He now is 8th all-time with 130. But, Brendan, we talked about this. As the season's gone on the last 2 years, his sack attack has kind of dropped a bit. Is that concerning to you watching this game from the outside?
Well, he's one part of a really good defense. So I think guys like Elaminian and Judge and those guys can make up for that. But at the end of the day, you've got to get pressure on whoever's the quarterback for Winnipeg. But, I mean, I don't think it's any secret. I think Strebler's going to play some. So he didn't attempt a throw last week. So I don't know if we call him a quarterback or what, but he's
back
in the game to run the ball. So Charleston's going to have to play the run really well, too.
Yeah, that's amazing, eh, Brendan? In 23 snaps, Strebler ran 13 of them, 82 yards and a touchdown. Never threw a pass. That's a Winnipeg playoff record for a quarterback. Now all of a sudden they come in here and they got a two-headed monster because, I mean, Zach Collaros can make 3 or 4 throws that, you know, Strebler doesn't have the ability to make.
True. I think, and, you know, Lapo, he's a guru at this stuff.
Yes.
You know, when Strebler comes in this game, he's probably going to end up throwing the ball because everybody thinks he's going to run.
I'm thinking the same
and that's the way those guys work. So they got to be aware of everything, but it's going to be interesting to watch.
Yeah, Lapo, would you say he's the best offensive coordinator in this league?
I'd say he's the most creative, if not the best. Yes,
for sure.
Yeah, he has 2 playbooks. Eskimos have just scored on a touchdown by former Stamp Tavares Daniels, and they're awaiting the extra point. So if it's good, they'll close to within less than a touchdown in Hamilton there. That's
That's good.
That might be a pretty good football game there at 13-6 when it looked like Hamilton Tiger Cats would roll away with it. So let's talk about that game for a second, Brendan. You got Dane Evans, who's on a team-friendly contract for next year. What would you do if you were the GM there and try to convince Jeremiah Masoli to come back to the fold? Now there's a gamble on both sides, because Masoli, he might be looking for a longer term deal, but you got to look, his injury is about a 10-month recovery, and he got hurt the end of July. That's a very interesting situation there.
It is, but it would be easy for me. I'd want them both. You need two quarterbacks in this league to win games, and if you just go with Evans, odds are he's not going to last 18 games. So what do you have behind him? And I don't think they have much, if anything. So if you have Masoli sitting there as a nugget to have in addition to Evans, you're sitting pretty good. Whether they can do that, I don't know. But
yeah, like how would you do that to keep him there?
Well, Evans is cheap, right? So you can just pay Masoli what he made this year, and he'd re-sign in a second probably. So I think the chances of them keeping them both are pretty good.
If you're Masoli, do you end up, I guess as a player, I can be asking myself this, but do you end up then trying to potentially go into free agency and go to a place like Ottawa where he's needed, obviously, and could probably make the same amount of money? It'll be interesting.
Yeah, you're right, Paul. I mean, there's going to be teams coming after Masoli probably as a starter, right? So, unless Hamilton says Evans is going back to be a backup, and heck, they might go to the Grey Cup with him. So that's interesting to see. But I think Masoli will have options. You're right.
For sure.
Well, the thing is, too, though, you got to remember this. You look at Hamilton's staff here, and you'd have to figure, Brendan, that Mark Washington, the D coordinator, and Tommy Condell, offensive coordinator, would be in the mix for vacant head coaching jobs, would you not?
Oh, I would think so. That's the old trend in the CFL. You just take them from the winning teams, and away you go. And you know, everybody thinks you're going to win with that, but you know, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. They're going to be in demand for sure.
You say that with disdain, like you don't like that
that
move.
Yeah, I do, because there's a lot of good coaches on a lot of bad teams. I mean, a lot of these coordinators, that's not the fault of them if they're 5-13 or 4-14.
That's true. Yeah.
And providing whoever is the guy you're talking to can get a good staff around them, I don't really care what team they come from.
So do you think Stephen McAdoo should get some consideration, being that he orchestrated a heck of a season with a career third stringer that's Western MOP, and he's public enemy number one around here till this year. Now I'm hearing nothing. He did it. You know, if we want to brag about Tommy Condell, we got to brag about Stephen McAdoo.
Absolutely.
I agree with you 100%, and there's no reason he shouldn't be looked at and shouldn't get an interview or two. No question.
Because I look at Masoli. Masoli has been really good because of Condell. I think Tommy Condell came in at the end of June Jones's stay there, and it was a seamless transition, and he's always been a great offensive coordinator. He goes to Ottawa. Maybe Jeremiah Masoli follows him to Ottawa.
Hmm. Possible. You know, June Jones was a big part of Masoli's success last year too, right, when he got that taken over. So, you know, the jury's out on Condell. He's done a good job, you know, with Evans and all those guys this year, and I think Jim Barker's in the background helping him out too. So, you know, we'll see how it all plays out.
Brendan, before we let you go, what's your one key to this football game? What is the key for you? Let's say if the Riders are to win this game, what do they got to do?
Well, you know, a lot of things I say, you guys, is pretty obvious, but they got to stop the run. They have to make the Winnipeg Blue Bombers beat them passing the football. That's pretty simple in my eyes. If Winnipeg wins games, they run the ball very successfully. Okay. They didn't attempt a throw in the fourth quarter last week. So, and they beat the Calgary Stampeders by doing it. So if you make them throw, you got a chance. But if they're running on you, you're going to have a problem.
To me, this is where a guy like Micah Johnson makes his money. This is why you signed him. He's been pretty good, not in terms of sacks, but he's been good as the year's gone on here. A guy like him and the up, you know, the Mac Henry, who's really come out of nowhere to be a real stud this year with Zach Evans not in the mix because of the injuries. Like that, do you see that, Paul?
I do. I mean, absolutely. That's, you know, like I said, it's been somewhat quiet for those guys, and you want to talk about Charleston Hughes and, you know, getting upfield and sacks and stuff like that, but those guys in the inside are going to have to earn their money today, and I think the hard part, too, especially with the Winnipeg offense, and when you think of running the ball, it's not just Andrew Harris. It's Nick Dembski. I mean, there's speed sweeping and jetting guys, and there's just so much chaos, so much movement going on. They're really going to have their work cut out for them.
You know, Brendan, like, I didn't ever think the Rough Riders, before I let you go, I didn't ever think the Rough Riders did a good enough job using Nick Dembski. You know, you pick him, he's a draft pick, and he just didn't seem to exploit his talents. Do you feel that way?
Well, he's flourished under Paul Lapolis' offense, is how I'll answer that.
Yeah. Well, maybe, but you know what? That's a chef that knows how to use the ingredients, maybe, right?
Well, I mean, especially if you've done your homework on him. Obviously, BT, you guys were the ones that drafted him, but Nick Dembski was naturally, I think, by trade, a running back at the University of Manitoba.
He was.
And he's like, he's him and Woodson and Coombs. They're all those types of players, right? So, yeah, Lapo's done what he's done, and it's, you know, good on him.
Is that the Dembski you envisioned when you drafted him?
Honestly, no. I mean, I was part of that group that did that, and I was responsible for it. But I thought he'd be a good slot back in this league. With, you know, George Cortez, his defense wanted to use him as a running back, but he was a young rookie coming out of youth sport, so he was sort of overburdened with everything, and his eyes were sort of like, whoa. But now that he's got 2 years under his belt, he can accept all this stuff. Man. So, no, I didn't envision him to be the all-purpose guy. I did envision him as a good receiver, though.
There's a guy. What's George Cortez doing these days? There's a guy I'm surprised. Is he done with football? Because there's a guy. What a catch.
Wow.
What a catch for a touchdown. Was that Banks?
That was.
Banks with an unbelievable catch. There's your MOP. Yeah. Sorry for jumping. Yeah. Where's George Cortez now? Former head coach of the Hamilton Tiger Cats. Where is he now? And why isn't a guy like that in the league?
I think George is living in Texas, and I don't know if he's out of coaching totally, meaning I don't know if he doesn't want to coach anymore. He's got a brilliant mind for the game, so. You know, with that new coach's cap in mix, he might resurface someday. Yeah. You never know.
Yeah, I'll have to ask the commissioner that a little later on when he's on the show. Okay, so your prediction for today's football game, Brendan Tamman, you've been the general manager of both these teams. Not sure where your heart lies, but where does your football brain lie in this game?
Well, I can answer this. My heart doesn't lie with either one of them, so whatever. I think all I'll say is this. I think one of the third-place teams is going to win. I know Edmonton's a fourth-place team. I just think one of those teams gets on a roll and wins one of these games today. I'm not sure which one. I hate to say this, but it easily could end up being Winnipeg. They just seem to have things going. And I don't feel comfortable with Fajardo's health, but we'll see. You know, hopefully for Saskatchewan people, I'm wrong.
That's the big question mark, and that's going to affect a lot of the predictions. I think if Fajardo was as healthy as he could be this time of year, like, you know, like normally, I think the Riders probably decided favorites in this one, but anything's up in the air now. And like you said, when you win that semifinal, and Brendan, you've been in that position before, when you win it, you get on a roll, you feel like you could play two teams on the field at once. And that's why
we were so successful against Calgary in the finals.
Yeah.
We never lost to them, Ballsy. 3-0.
No, that's right. Yeah, that's right. No, it's a good point. Hey, Brendan, enjoy the game. Thanks for being candid and being on our
show.
I appreciate it, man.
See you.
All right, when we come back, we'll hear from Rob Vanstone on the Mr. Lube Hotline. It's Where Are They Now? Get some more thoughts from Paul Waldo, and we'll be joined by other guests, including Luke Mulliter and the commissioner, Randy Ambrosi, as well, before the show's done live on set. We're coming to you from Harvard Studios 620 here. It's Countdown to Kickoff on the Saskatchewan Rough Riders Radio Network. And this is Where Are They Now, where we talk to the legends that helped build this league in terms of players or builders, coaches, GMs. We also talk to legendary media members, and joining us on the Mr. Lube Hotline, I believe he's there. Get fast, warranty-proof, top-to-bottom maintenance at any of the four Mr. Lube Regina locations. This is Regina Leader Post's stupendous writer, Rob Vanstone. How are you today, Rob?
I'm fine, thanks, Ballsy. How are you?
Good, man. You're going to be a guest on our halftime anchor along with Mitchell Blair, but we thought we'd get you on here. Okay, so 1972, Paul Waldo was not born. Michael Ball was barely born.
Barely born.
And Rob Vanstone was 8 or 9 years old. I believe that was your first plane ride to the 1972 final in Winnipeg, the last time these teams have met in a Western final. Mm-hmm. Tell me about that.
Yeah, it was. It was November 19th, 1972, and the Riders beat Edmonton 8-6 in that thriller of a Western Conference semifinal. And I don't even know why it was, but Mom decided we should go to Winnipeg for the West Final. So she booked a flight. We left that morning, stayed at what was then known as the Winnipeg Inn, got a day suite at the hotel, went to the game, and then flew back later on that evening. And little did I know what kind of game I was going to see. I'd been to lots of Rider games, even at 8 years old at that point in my life. But to see a game that was, I think, still one of the Rider classics of all time, and it's hard to believe that was 47 years ago, and it's hard to believe that there hasn't been a West Final between those two teams since then. I just remember being cold and whiny, and Mom kept saying to me, "Ronnie will find a way. Ronnie will find a way." And they were down 24-7 in the third quarter.
Right.
So I was rather skeptical that Mom just kept saying, Ronnie will find a way as long as there's time on the clock, dot, dot, dot.
Mm-hmm. So tell us through your eyes what it felt like when the Riders finally won that game with Mr. Abinchan.
I was just in shock because the second last play of the game, the Riders had tried a field goal. He'd missed. The Bombers punted it out. Ron Lancaster punted it back in. Paul Williams, a future Rough Rider, punted it back out. Charlie Collins, a linebacker, retrieved the ball, and then Winnipeg was penalized for no yards. So the ball moved up 15 yards to the point of infraction. They try again. Jack Abinchan kicks a 32-yard field goal to win the game and send the Riders to the Grey Cup. I just remember sitting in the stands forever, just what have we just seen? And I remember being on a bus back to the hotel. It was frantic trying to get back to the hotel. And even though the Riders had the home team, the Bombers, had just lost a game, and it was the only time they lost at home all year.
Yeah,
I remember being on this bus, and it felt like a Rider home game because it was just full of Rider fans. And the plane ride home was the same way. From the moment the plane left the ground, there was a guy at the front of the plane on the right side who just kept chanting, "We're number one, we're number one." And the entire one-hour flight back to Regina, this guy just kept screaming it. I don't know how his voice survived it.
It's funny, man. I'm at church this morning, and everybody's strolling in their Rider jerseys or whatever. The lady goes up to the pulpit to introduce the Mass there at Holy Child. She says, "This is Go Riders Go Day," and the whole place explodes. It's really what it's all about, isn't it, Rob? This, and I know you grew up a Rider fan. You and your mom made a bunch of Dash Tour trips too, didn't you?
And we went to 5 Grey Cups and together, including the infamous Tony Gabriel game of 1976, which was the first Grey Cup I ever saw.
Yeah.
So it's, you don't see this very often. I think it's the rarest of Rider home games, a West final. If you look at it, you know, in the last 43 years, there's been more Grey Cup games held in Regina than there have been Western finals. The Riders have won more Grey Cups than they have played host to Western finals. This, it seems improbable when you consider the number of years the team has been around and the fact that it's not a very big league.
Yeah,
you think you'd luck into one every decade just by the law of averages, but it's so rare, and it's such a spectacle and something to be cherished just because of its infrequency and obviously the stakes of the game.
Yeah, okay, so 1966, the Riders win a Grey Cup and finished in first place. That's the only time it happened. But that was a best-of-three. Riders played the Bombers that year, too. It's hard to believe they played a game 3 days apart, like a playoff game.
Yeah, and that was so routine back then. The Riders in the subsequent years played Calgary in some real knock-em-out, smash-em-up Western Conference playoff games. And nobody really blinked. That was just the way it was done. And but to open the 1966 playoffs, the Rough Riders went to played host to Winnipeg. They won 14-7. And then just 3 days later won 21-19 to go to the Grey Cup. And that was sort of the Ed Bowl for the Rough Riders. Ed Buchanan had a long touchdown run, and Ed McQuarters retrieved a Kenny Plain fumble and took it the distance to pretty much salt away the victory.
Yeah, for sure. Rob Vanstone joining us in the Mr. Lube Hotline. Where are they now? Chatting about the rarity of a West Final being played here and the rarity of a West Final being played between these two football teams. And that's the cool thing about this, man. This is the closest geographical rivals in the Canadian Football League outside, I guess, Hamilton and Toronto. This is a beauty, man. This is going to be, Rob, I think, a real prairie slobber knocker today.
I really think so. I mean, what is there to choose between these teams? They played, for the most part, such tight competitive football all year where a play or two would have swung the game. And it's a different Bombers team than the one the Rough Riders saw during the regular season, too, because Andrew Harris missed two of those three games. Mm-hmm. Zach Collaros has not yet played against the Rough Riders. So you're seeing a different opponent here. And I think the Bombers are seeing a different opponent, too, because the Rough Riders have played some important football since then, and it's almost like pressing a refresh button once the playoffs start. Look at the semifinal round. You just really can't factor in a lot of what happened during the regular season and think that it's going to replicate itself in the playoffs.
Rob, what's the name of that book again?
It's called 100 Things Rough Riders Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die.
Okay, so that's how many books for you now?
3.2. The point two was a real hit. I did a book on the 66 team, one of the 89 team. I was one of 6 collaborators on the on a history book that came out to commemorate the 100th anniversary in 2010, and now this latest offering.
really love your work. I read the book myself. I just keep forgetting the title. It's a really great book. That 72 final is in the book. I know you referenced a lot of guys like Jeff Fairholm was in the book, and there's lots of great stories. Let me ask you this, though. This season right now, this 2019 season, Rob Vanstone, could be a book. Like, you couldn't write a book better than this. You got, okay, there's so many storylines. You got, just in this West Final, you got Paul Lapolice, who the Riders wanted to interview to be a coach. He's denied, and he's mad at the Bombers, but he's here today. You got Bo Levi Mitchell, who they went after but didn't get on the plane to come here. The Riders settle, quote-unquote, for Zach Collaros. Zach Collaros goes out three plays in, gets traded to Toronto as damaged goods, and now he's playing against the Riders, actually has a hand in helping the Riders secure first place this rare game. But then he can knock him out, and the Riders have a career third down specialist become the MOP, and will have to probably overcome injury, need all the sprinkles of Jesus he can get today to get the Riders to the Grey Cup. I mean, Rob, you have a fourth book just sitting right here.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you look at the fact that to clinch first place, which doesn't happen very often, they have to go with a raw rookie, Isaac Harker.
Yeah.
They're just the book was almost done. The manuscript was due February 1st, but then things started happening. Mm-hmm. Chris Jones leaves. Jeremy O'Day named general manager. Craig Dickinson hired as head coach. So even there's a 2019 impact on this book because of everything that happened during this most eventful season for the Rough Riders dating back to January. So if you look at the saga of the 2019 Rough Riders, you look at how utterly unexpected it was for this to unfold as it has, considering that one of the first big announcements that they had all season was that Chris Jones had signed a contract extension. And then a week later, he's gone. And then so many things happen that are just unpredictable and unforeseen. And ultimately, I think historic. It's been a real magical year for the Rough Riders.
5:26 to go in the second quarter in Hamilton. Tiger Cats leading Edmonton 20-10. We'll let you go and come to the stadium here, Rob. But before I get a prediction on the game from you, George Reed Way, long overdue here, rode in front of the stadium. They've named it George Reed Way. So I'm going to ask you, the now resident football historian in Saskatchewan, who's the greatest rider of all time? Is it George Reed or is it Ron Lancaster? I submit Ron Lancaster is the greatest figure in CFL history. If you combine his playing, his coaching, and his broadcasting, everything, being a face of the league, a diplomat, I believe, you know, the only thing he didn't do was a commissioner, and he probably could have done really well at that too. But I would submit that it's okay if you said George Reed was the greatest Rough Rider of all time. How do you feel about that, Rob?
Yeah, it's an impossible argument to even come to terms with, and I've tried so many times. Ronnie was named the most outstanding player in the league twice, George once. Ronnie's contributions, it's so many levels in the league, are unsurpassed. George's contributions in the community and beyond football are, I think, legendary in and of themselves. While he was playing, he was a member or affiliated with 47 different community or charitable groups at once.
Wow.
In addition to playing football at a level that few could ever dream of. That's George Reed. I mean, he has the Order of Canada, and that pretty much says it all.
Yeah, no, for sure, man. Yeah, definitely. It's too bad Ronnie left us so young, but it's nice that George Reed still comes to the games, comes to the radio station, living legend. When I see him sitting next to me, I'm like, that's our Jim Brown. Like, that is our Jim Brown. It's cool. And I hope they show him today to get the crowd whipped into a frenzy if he's here, because you know he'll be here. And the road paved with green and white in front, George Reed Way. Okay, Rob Vanstone, in an improbable season, where we never expected things to go this way, do you see the Riders overcoming this pretty big injury to Cody Fajardo and winning this game today?
I think they will. I really don't have a lot of doubt about it. That's probably not good news concerning my prognosticative pedigree, but I just look at this team and so many things that it's overcome and so many perceived obstacles that the team has been able to deal with so adeptly all year. So given a home game to get to a Grey Cup game, to me, that just seems like it's going to be another chapter in a storybook that has a long way to go yet, or at least another week.
That's the great Rob Vanstone from the Leader Post. And where can they get your book, my friend?
I think it's available at Indigo. It's available at McNally Robinson in Saskatoon. And on Amazon as well, and I have two copies in my trunk.
So get out in the parking lot. Maybe Rob can do a deal for Christmas stocking stuffer. I love it. Hey, enjoy the game, Rob. We'll hear you at halftime, okay?
You bet, Paul. Thanks so much. Have a great day.
Take care. That is Rob Vanstone. Where are they now? Talking about this rare matchup between the Riders and the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. Okay, we're going to talk to a guy that's won three Grey Cup championships and also has been involved in coming off the bye and what's it like. We'll get those comments and much, much more from Paul Waldo. This is Countdown to Kickoff brought to you by your friends at KFC and Waxy's Bobcat. And by the way, you want a $25 gift card to KFC? One of our major sponsors, why don't you give us a call, 936-6262 in town, toll-free out of town, 1-866-767-0620. It's Countdown to Kickoff on the Rough Riders Radio Network. Michael Ball, Paul Waldo back here at Harvard Studio 620, getting set for the Western Final. The Saskatchewan Rough Riders and the Winnipeg Blue Bombers meeting for just the third time in this game in the modern era of football. Our winner of the $25 gift card to KFC is our friend and grand coolie, Troy Koser. If it's the same Troy Koser I know, Troy is hopefully the Riders kick butt like he's kicking cancer's butt.
Absolutely.
So hopefully that's the case as the Rough Riders take on the Bombers here today. Paul Waldo joining me here, three-time Grey Cup champ. We look on the out-of-town scoreboard. Hamilton.
They're hanging in there.
Hamilton beating Edmonton 20-10, but the Eskimos moving into Hamilton territory late in the first half. The Eskimos are hanging in there. So, Paul, let's turn our attention back to this football game. Riders coming off the bye week. You've come off bye weeks before. How tough is it to get revved up? Is there a little bit of rust or lackluster feelings coming into this one?
You know,
a better term.
I think a lot of that will depend on obviously the week that they had leading up with regards to their preparation. I know when I was back in Montreal, we clinched Division 3 years in a row, and we were really adamant on practicing, coming back early, and just getting back into football mode. Excitement's going to be there, the emotion's going to be there, but you physically got to be prepared. So I think with this group of guys that we have now, the other big thing is having veterans. We talked about that off air. Guys who have, you know, been there, you know, the Charleston Hugheses, the Micah Johnsons, the William Powells, guys who have won Grey Cups, who have had
Solomon,
I mean, the list goes on and on. So Dan Clark, Brendan Labatt, these veterans that have been there and know how to handle, you know, not only the adversity portion, but the success, being able to take the time off and do what they got to do to be ready.
Obviously, a crowd in full throat can help you too as well. But you got to manage there's the emotions at the start. In fact, I find sometimes, I don't know if you found this, I mean, I never got to this level, but if you're ready for a big game, when I was playing with the Rams, you'd get so psyched up that you'd be, after about 7 minutes in, you'd be revved right down.
You'd drop.
Right?
Oh, it's crazy. That's why they say football is a game of controlled chaos, right? You can't just... Nobody ever wins a game on just emotion. You still got to be prepared, and you got to be able to channel it. You got to be able to gauge it. You got to be able to use it in certain times of the game. And like you said, I mean, you can get so revved up that sometimes it works against you. So hopefully that doesn't happen. Like I said, we got a veteran crew of guys here that'll make sure they calm everybody down and get them ready.
Trevor Harris on the scrambles inside the 20, short of a first down, but it'll be second and short as they're into the last minute and a half of the first half. Hamilton leading Edmonton 20-10. In terms of the Saskatchewan Rough Riders defense, you know, we talked about Micah Johnson a little bit and Matt Henry. A.C. Leonard has 5 sacks in the last 5 games. His game is really elevated. Might be a guy like that. You know, in playoff time, it's always, you know, we talk about the Charleston Hughes and the Solomon Alamimian and the Micah Johnsons. Maybe it's an A.C. Leonard, who we like to say is the Swiss Army knife of this defense, comes to play today.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, whether you want to call them unsung heroes, whatever you want to categorize them as, but, you know, guys are always going to prep for the Charleston Hugheses and the Sullies, and, you know, even on the flip side with guys like Willie Jefferson. You know, they're going to bring in extra protection. They're going to do things against certain guys. So it's going to be a guy like an A.C. Leonard or a guy who's kind of flown under the radar, who's continuing to have success as the season progresses and goes along.
So we talk about having to take the runaway. How do you take the runaway? In layman's terms, how would you take the runaway from Winnipeg today? What would you do defensively to control Andrew Harris and to control Chris Streffler? How would you play your ends? How would you do it on defense?
Everything's going to be situational, right? I mean, you chart, and I think first and foremost, what you have to do is you got to keep them.
Make them second and long?
Make them second and long, right? If you make them second and long, well, then that's how you literally take the actual run under the situation, because then they're going to have to throw the ball, right? But I think another thing is going to be is making sure they get lined up properly. The one hard thing about playing against Paul Lapolice is all the motion that he has and all the mismatches that he makes. If you can't get lined up, you can't play the gaps, and you can't stop anybody. So guys are going to have to get lined up. They're going to have to know their cues, and at the end of the day, you're just going to have to be physical.
For a team that grinds, for a team that runs,
yep.
They certainly didn't they didn't score a touchdown last week. They didn't have a play in the offensive red zone. The furthest they got down was to the 24-yard line. All their touchdowns came from without that area. So that's an interesting stat. And the Bombers, last in passing, getting to a division final is rare. Winnipeg did it this year. Previous team to do it, 2010. But the thing with Kolaros is, which is crazy to think about, this is only his third full game with the Winnipeg Blue Bombers at the West Final.
It's insane. Once again, you got a guy who's
and his first two were against Calgary.
I know. Wild. You figured, you know, the first one maybe, I don't know, beginner's luck, if you want to call that, and then he goes back into Calgary last week, and they're able to pull it off. So it's going to be an interesting one.
Who in their, like, is Adams the guy you want to take out in their passing game? Obviously, he had two long, he had the 71-yarder and one over 30. I mean, Wolartowski's okay. Lawler has his moments, but
he's the other one.
Dembski?
You're going to do what you can to, obviously, to limit the Adams. I mean, he's a big play guy. He's going to make plays. That's how it goes. But Nick Dembski is the X factor. He's the guy that's going to carry the ball in the backfield. He's the guy that's going to be taking sweeps. He's going to be the guy that's working down the field. He's a big play guy. He's explosive. I think he's the guy that they have to stop. I mean, Andrew Harris is Andrew Harris. Everybody knows he's going to get his touches. You're not going to be able to completely eliminate him. You just got to manage the line of scrimmage and control it so he doesn't kill you. But Nick Dembski, I think, is the guy.
We're going to get to Paul Waldo in a bit. I want to talk special teams with you, but speaking of special teams, because it'll be a key in today's football game with Medlock on one side, Lowther trying to come back from that game against the Eskimos a couple of weeks ago when he was 3 of 6 in the field goal department, and of course John Ryan, who is an all-star with the Rough Riders in his return to Saskatchewan, playing his first ever CFL playoff game against the team he broke into the league with. He's joining us now in our profiles feature.
Nice.
Time to say hi to our friend John Ryan, former Seattle Seahawk, current Saskatchewan Rough Rider. How are you today, JR?
No, I'm doing great, thanks.
Thanks for being on the show. Now, did you watch the Monday night game?
I did, yeah.
Yeah, okay, so I'm watching the game. The 49ers, Kyle Shanahan was with them with Atlanta when they blew that 28-3 lead loss of Super Bowl to the New England Patriots. I thought there was some questionable coaching there. And there's some questionable coaching last night. Now, you have the ball. Seattle has no timeouts. A tie is better than a loss. Like, they got no timeouts. Why not run the ball or play for the tie? Because your 8-0-1 is better than 8-1. You'd be two games up on anybody else in the conference. But now you're only a half game up in terms of a win and the loss column. Like, I don't get what they were doing there. Or is that a case where your mentality is just go win the game? You're not playing for a tie.
Yeah. It might be, but I think also that 8-0 came into factor. You know, that undefeated season. I think if they were 5-3, they'd play for the tie.
Yeah.
You know, I think they wanted to keep that undefeated season going, and I think that kind of creeped into his mind, and I think it cost him.
Do you sometimes, though, you're on the sidelines, and I'm not talking maybe this year. You know where I'm going with this, and you can answer how you want. Do you sometimes, like, what are we doing here? Like, guys, what are we doing here? Like, for instance, go back to the Super Bowl. You won the 1 year. The next year, you're on the 1 yard line. You throw a pass instead of running it in with Marshawn Lynch. Or am I bringing up bad memories, John? Do you still think about that one?
I think about it all the time. Yeah, you're bringing up bad memories. At the same time, that's just how Pete used to coach, or he still does coach. You know, he's going for it. You know, and in that same game in the Super Bowl, you know, we had the ball. I forget what yard line, around 25-yard line. And I'm just thinking, like, Pete kicked a field goal. There's a few seconds left, and he throws the ball up into the end zone. And Chris Matthews catches the touchdown right before the end of the first half. You know,
right.
So it's kind of that same mentality where he's just going to go for it no matter what. And you know, sometimes it works out. So you kind of, you live by the sword and die by the sword.
Yeah. So let me ask you, does losing stay with you longer than the feeling of winning? Do you know what I mean? When you lose a big game like that, does it stay with you longer? Do you remember that more than the feelings you had when you won the Super Bowl?
I think most people say yeah, but I'm going to say no. You know, I think it might be a little bit different had I never won a Super Bowl and I was sitting here just with that one loss. I think it's a... But I think about the Super Bowl we won a lot more than the Super Bowl we lost, probably 10-1. You know, it's not even close. So I think that's part of just being an optimistic person. And obviously losing sucks and you hate to do it, but I like to think about the wins more than the losses.
One last NFL question for you. What about your buddy Russell Wilson there? He's got, what is it? He had 21 touchdowns, one interception coming into that game. He threw one interception in overtime. Everybody's like, what the heck just happened here? Like, he is playing on another world right now. It's him and Lamar Jackson, I think, for the MVP in the NFL right now.
No, without question. I think Russell's the MVP of the league right now. You know, he's the ultimate team player. You know, he doesn't like to throw that interception, but at the same time, I guarantee you, you're on the sideline saying, we're going to get the ball back, we're going to win the game, and that's exactly what he did. You know, he's just the ultimate competitor, and you know, I think right now he's the best player in the NFL.
You've played at the pinnacle game. You've played in the Super Bowl twice, okay? We talked about a winning one, losing one. Does that experience help you with what's coming up Sunday? You've never played in a CFL playoff game, so where I'm going with this, do you get nervous for a game like this, or it's like, I've already played in the top game ever, this is nothing to me?
For me, I try to approach every game as the same. I know that some people say, you know, you got to get up for big games or whatever, and I feel like when you start doing that, then you kind of pick and choose when you go, and I try to approach every game the same. And that's probably why I get nervous for every game, and I think those nerves are good. It means I care, and you know, I've been approaching it and preparing just like it's any other game. So
I've asked you this on my morning show. Yeah, I've asked you this on my morning show on The Wolf, and I'm going to ask you this way too on this show. How much do you think about your dad on times like this? You're playing your first ever CFL playoff game because he didn't play in the playoffs with Winnipeg. You're playing against a team you broke into the league with in a playoff game to go to the Grey Cup. Your rider, your dad used to be a season ticket holder. You were a season ticket holder. How much do you think about your father who passed away a few years ago? How much do you think about him on a time like this?
Quite a bit. You know, I think about my dad quite often, you know, football related or not. But, you know, something like this is definitely special. I think that he would have definitely gotten a kick out of this. And he would have definitely obviously been in the stands for games like this. So yeah, I definitely think about him, and it's going to be a special game.
Who'd you watch the game with on Sunday when the Bombers played the Calgary Stampeders?
I actually watched it by myself. I know that the team was watching it in the auditorium, and I was a little tired, so I ended up sleeping through the first half and got the second half at home. So nothing too special. I usually prefer to watch games like that by myself.
Were you shocked with the outcome?
No, not really. No, I've been saying all year long that I thought that, especially the top three teams in the West, even the fourth team in the West, Edmonton, I thought all four teams were very evenly matched. And, Edmonton or, Calgary, Winnipeg and us are, you know, all neck and neck. And I think it's just going to be any given day that the best team, whoever plays best on that Sunday, is going to win the game. So I think you're going to see a pretty good game come this Sunday.
Tell you what, I watched Justin Medlock, man. He nailed a 52-yard field goal, and to most fans, they just sloughed that off. Well, that's what he gets paid to do. He gets paid a couple hundred grand. He should make that kick. It is not easy kicking a football. It's a block of ice, and to do it from 52 yards out is quite amazing. Talk about that, John, and how tough it is to kick in weather like this.
It's very difficult, especially that game on Sunday. I believe it was, you know, whatever it was, almost 20 below.
Yeah.
And the thing that happens with the balls is, the science behind it is that they pump them up inside. They pump them up to, you know, 13 pounds of pressure. And when they get outside, you know, weather like that, they deflate quite a bit. They'll go down to 10, even 8 pounds of pressure. And then they obviously freeze as well. So kicking a ball is all about how you compress it. And the ball just doesn't compress properly when it's flat and hard like that. So hit a ball like he did 52 yards is really, really impressive. I was impressed by watching it.
Yeah, and I mean, he does all three roles. Like, this guy, he's definitely worth the money. Talk about your kicker, Brett Lowther. He had a tough game there, the last game of the regular season. He's had some big kicks. One of them beat the Bombers on the famous Pilsner run that you and him had going into to Pill Country there. But just talk about him and the mentality that you have to have as a kicker to overcome that and move on to the next kick in the next game. And I really like, we talked to Dickey after the game, and I asked him, why would you keep rolling out your kicker when he wasn't making the kicks? And he said, I trust in my players to make the plays and work themselves out of the slump. talk about that mentality from your coach and what you expect from your kicker this week.
Yeah, he's a great kicker. I think what I love about him most is he's not a kicker at all. You know, most kickers are former soccer players. Nothing against soccer players.
Yeah.
But a lot of them have a little bit different mentality than your normal football player, or your average football player. And Brett, you know, he's a great athlete. He just happens to be able to kick. And you know, it was just one of those games where, you know, I kind of talked to him after every kick, and pretty much every kick he hit it well, and he hit it the way he wanted to. It just didn't go between the pipes. It was one of those days, and I said to him, you know, just keep on kicking it, because you're kicking the ball well. You know, we're just not getting the results right now. And, you know, he wanted all those kicks. I think he wanted one at the end of the first half there, too. You know, he would have, if you asked him, you know, he would have kept on going out, whether he makes it or not, because he believes he's going to make the next one. And he could definitely, you know, as you mentioned, Medlock's a great kicker, and Brett is as well, and the game definitely could come down to those two on Sunday.
Is that a good part of your job, being a counselor? Like, you almost got to kind of be a counselor, you know? You got to settle him down and kind of be like that support system for him, don't you?
Yeah, a little bit. I think that's always how it is with kickers. It's a very tough position, you know? Everything is, you know, very black and white. Either 100% or you're 0% on every kick. And so, you know, as a punter and as a guy that's been around for so long, you know, you got to know when to, you know, get in his ear and help him out, and when to just shut up and mind your own business.
Yeah. Talk about holding, because that's one of the things that I don't think people appreciate about what you do. Like, I had that written down on my notes after the last game. I didn't get to it. I was going through my old notes. I'm really impressed with how you hold on field goals. Who taught you how to do that, and how much pride do you take in that aspect of your game?
I was pretty much self-taught. You know, when I went to the NFL, I knew that as a punter, you have to hold. And it was just through thousands and thousands of reps. You know, when I first learned how to do it, when I was, you know, trying to make the NFL, I remember just going up to people with the football and just having them just throw it to me over and over again, whether it be, I mean, sometimes it's literally just in my hotel, just people throwing a football at me over and over again, working on my holds. And it's just a muscle memory thing. And, you know, over the years, I've probably, I don't know how many, hundreds of thousands of holds, and just have gotten better at it over the years, and something I definitely pride myself on.
Talk about the mechanics of that, though, because if it's even off by a second, you're out to lunch.
Oh, yeah. We deal with, you know, milliseconds with stuff like that. You know, Brett's, from the time the ball snapped, pinned, and kicked, it's 1.4 seconds. And so as a holder, you have to catch it, place it, spin it, and have it tilted just right every single time. So many times as a guy who's, you know, as a holder, I watch so many, especially at the college level, so many missed kicks that, you know, aren't the kicker's fault at all. Everyone always comes down on the kicker, but if you have a bad hold, you have zero shot of making a kick. So a lot of misses are on the holder, and people just don't quite realize that.
Last quick question for you, John. Crazy game, eh? You start the season with Zach Collaros as your quarterback. That seemed like a whole lifetime ago, and now he's coming back as part of the two-headed monster for the Bombers against the guy that was a career third-down specialist, now the West nominee for MOP. Like, what a wild season this has been.
Oh, it's been wild. You know, Hamilton, the very first game, Zach going down the first drive. I think a lot of people right from there said the season's over. And then, you know, we start 0-2, 1-3 going into a bye week. And I think a lot of people had written us off at that point again. And then, you know, we just start to gel and come together as a team and started winning football games. And I think we won whatever it was, 7 of our next 8 games. And all of a sudden, you know, here come the Riders again. So it's been a lot of fun. It's been up and down, but it's been a great year.
The Riders have only played the Bombers 3 times for a West final. This is the 3rd time. And the only time they finished first and won a Grey Cup was 1966, and they beat the Bombers in the West final. John Ryan is a part of the 3rd one. We're happy to have our hometown hero here punting for the Riders. Good luck on Sunday, John, okay?
Thank you very much.
Hey, well, we have a second. I want to give a shout-out to Emily Best, Chris's wife. Hey. It's her birthday today, so he's celebrating with his wife. It's Ballsy coming to you live here from Harvard Studio 620 with my buddies Paul Waldo, 3-time Grey Cup champ and Grey Cup champion in his own right, Luke Molitor, champion in the community, working with the Red Cross. Ugh. He's also our color commentator.
I'd much rather you be able to say I'm a 3-cup, 3-time champion.
Yeah, I know. Oh, hey, it's good. Hey, that's okay. Hey, so I see you got Luther, your son, shoveling.
Oh, yeah. Oh man, he's working the road. got him a little shovel of Canadian Tire. I think his grandparents got it for him. And he's getting the technique down, too.
Yeah, you're going to get him a vacuum cleaner
out
here.
That, you got to get under the wet ice or whatever. Oh, yeah.
And you're
Dyson.
Yeah.
So listen to this. Dyson actually has made kids' vacuum cleaners that work, that actually vacuum everything. Oh, yeah. And they made them because the kids want to play around next to their parents. Yeah. Well, not me. I'm buying that thing for him next week. He's getting
get to work.
Yeah,
kid.
I'm screwing up the third level of my house all the time. It's about time he starts
doing something.
We got to be accountable around here.
Okay, so here we go. The Winnipeg Blue Bombers coming here, world beaters. They beat the Calgary Stampeders. Calgary looked like they wanted no part of Winnipeg's front in that game after the start of it.
Calgary wasn't prepared for Chris Drevler. And then when Chris Drevler had the ball, they weren't prepared to be physical. Yep. That was the first time since I've been in the league, since 2004, where I've seen Calgary play soft. You've never been able to say that about them. They played soft, and it was really nice to see, obviously, because we all hate Calgary in this room. Yeah. But they played soft, and I think that today, we always do Mullinder's matchup or three keys to the game, right, boys? Right. Ball, dude, we always. It's simple today.
Yep.
Be the more physical team, period.
And Winnipeg is out. Winnipeg out-physical Saskatchewan in two of the three meetings this year.
Yeah, Winnipeg came in and they played a physical. Be the more physical team. We all talk about all player safety and, oh, man, concussions and blah, 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 right. blah. But listen, this is a sport that has its foundation in violence and one-on-one domination. Today, you got to go out there. You got to play violent. You got to play aggressive. You got to be more the more physical team. And it's a beautiful day. This is probably one of the best Western final weather days I've seen.
William Powell has never had a 100-yard rushing game in the playoffs. Can he get that today? Winnipeg doesn't give up a lot on the ground. Will he have to get close to that for the Riders to win?
Yeah, actually, I think that it's the other way around. I do think Willie Powell can get 100 yards, and I think that the run game has to be essential for the Riders. I think it's Winnipeg. Winnipeg can't get 100 yards on the ground.
Yeah.
Right? And that's why I talk about being the more physical team today. I don't care who's running the ball, whether it's Strevler, whether it's Mike O'Shea's mom, whether it's whether it's Lance Armstrong, the guy on steroids. Like, literally, we got to come out here, stop the run. Anytime they have the football, be a physical team.
So when you look at, we were talking about this, Micah Johnson maybe doesn't have the sacks. Is this kind of a game where you expect him to earn his money?
This is the perfect game for Micah Johnson. And as a matter of fact, when you look at the interior defensive line, it's also the reason why you see Mac Henry in there as starting D tackle.
He's an animal.
That guy right there can play the round. Those two guys in the middle, Mac Henry might get out of position every now and then, I can guarantee you one thing. They're not going to back down from a physical confrontation. And that's why I love having Micah Johnson in here today. And you're right, Ballsy. The sacks aren't there. The stats aren't there. Yada, yada, yada. Guess what? At the end of the day, 2019 ends, if the ring is on Micah Johnson's finger, that's what we brought him in here
for. So, and lastly, before we let you go, how much does the experience that Solomon Elamimian has, Micah Johnson, Charleston Hughes, even Brandon Labatt, Dan Clark, playing in games like this?
Well, this is the best part of the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. Paul's the same. You know, you want to know why Paul has three Grey Cup rings? Because he knows how to win, right? And when you come into these games, you rely on your vets. Your vets always play their best games in the playoffs, whether it's quarterfinals, semifinals, or Grey Cups. And right now, they're going to lean on the leadership from guys like Micah, from guys like Charleston, Adam even, but especially guys like Clark, Blue, right? It's nice to have guys that understand how to win. That's why I really like having Arsenault back in the lineup as well, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
But you can't sleep. I mean, Winnipeg's got some winners, not as many.
Yeah.
Not as many. And the better part and the better thing is I think the Saskatchewan Rough Riders also have the better coaching staff.
So do you have the Riders winning this game?
I do have the Riders winning this game, but I don't have them blowing them out. I have the Riders winning by in a real close game,
like 4 points.
One of those games where you just like where you sit up there, or when you leave your seat at Mosaic, you're like, oh my God, that was a heartbreaking, right?
Yeah.
It was a heart wrenching game.
Right,
I feel like this is going to be a real close. And it's whenever you hear coaches talk about, oh well, you know, it's a 60 minute battle, blah blah blah. That's what it is today. This is going to come down to the last second, literally the last second. Hopefully not 2009, where actually the other seconds matter too after the last second. But literally, man, this is going to be a battle to the end, and I am absolutely pumped up for it.
Thanks for this. Enjoy your broadcast, man.
Right,
we're
going
to be paying attention. Yeah, awesome. Luke Mahler joining us for Mahler's matchup. When we come back, we'll hear from Darian Durant on the Mr. Lube Hotline. This is Countdown to Kickoff, brought to you by KFC and Waxy's Bobcat on the Rough Riders Radio Network. And this show is brought to you by KFC and Waxy's Bobcat. It's Countdown to Kickoff. Ballsy along with Paul Waldo coming to you from Harvard Studio 620 as the fans are filing in here to the Harvard Studio 620 Lounge, getting set for the Riders and the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. Out-of-town scoreboard, Hamilton 20, Edmonton 13 through one half of play in the Eastern Final as A berth in the 107th Grey Cup is on the line in Calgary next week. Hey, he wanted to give a shout-out to a couple of buddies, a couple of my buddies listening to the broadcast. Well, my friend Steve and his sons, Colby and Dyson, they'd love to come to the game, but Colby's got a hockey game, so he's going to be at the Al Ritchie playing hockey today.
Oh, nice.
But they're sending their well wishes to the Rough Riders who are listening to our show.
There you go.
You're sounding like $1 million, they say, Paul.
Hey, thank you very much. So Colby, greatly appreciated.
Colby and Dyson, have a great day with your dad there at the hockey rink. Okay, so it's time to head out on the Mr. Lube hotline where we get fast, warranty-approved, top-to-bottom maintenance at any of the three Mr. Lube Regina locations. And let's say hi to our friend Darian Durant. Darian, how are you today, Doubles?
I'm great, guys. How's it going?
My guy.
Awesome, Darian. Okay, so I want you to put, I want you to give us the speak the truth for us here, okay? What do you, in your, through your eyes, okay? So earlier in the week, Coach says that Cody Fajardo will play, but he might not start. And I'm thinking, okay, if the Western MLP is going to play, but he's not going to start, can he really go? How effective can he be? And then yesterday he said he's going to start, and we expect him to be effective. So how do you read the tea leaves there, Darian?
It's tough. I mean, I look at it as a situation where if your guy, you know, the Western nominee for MLP, if he's going to be alternating snaps with any other QBs, then that's a bad sign. You know, like I said numerous times in the past couple of weeks, that the oblique is just it's a tricky injury, and especially for a quarterback, it's just you use all your force, all your core to be able to throw the ball. And this is a tricky injury, and the only thing that can heal it is time. And time has – it's been on his side as far as having a bye, but I'm not sure that it's been enough time for him to heal to a point where he can – get enough velocity on the ball in a game of this magnitude.
He said earlier in the week, Darian, it's actually helped his mechanics a little bit, just the restrictions on throwing the ball. It's helped his mechanics. I don't know if I believe that or not.
Right.
But I'm thinking if you get shot up, your midsection gets shot up, it throws everything off. Like it would.
You can't feel.
Everything's numb. You can't feel. Wouldn't that throw your mechanics off?
No question. I agree with you. I think you need every single part of your core. Yep. To be able to throw, you know, and if a part goes numb, then I don't see you having the accuracy, having the torque that you need to put the ball on the money. So, but I do think that he'll gut it out and he'll go out there and he'll do what he can. I think he gives the Riders the best chance to win, you know, even at 50%. So I think he'll gut it out and you'll see him go out there and do the best he can. But like I said numerous times, I'm just not sure how effective he'll be.
So, Darian, how do the Riders approach this offensively, do you think, with a guy maybe at 50, 60% at quarterback at best?
Well, I think you have to do some of the same things that Winnipeg did last year when Strebler was the first-time starter. He ran the ball a lot. You know, Coach Lapo did a great job of being creative and putting him in situations where he didn't have to push the ball downfield. He didn't have to throw into tight coverages and three-man rushes. So, I think you have to be creative. You have Bennett back there, who's a great runner, who's a physical guy, who and you know, he can be a 1-2 punch with William Powell back there, you know, as far as running the ball and being effective and keeping the Riders in second and short and second and manageable situations. So there are ways to be creative. Winnipeg and Coach Lapo have shown that you really don't need a pure passer to kind of compete and win games. And, you know, there are ways around it.
You know, looking at the roster, you see Evans has been bothered by that toe injury, mm-hmm. and he practiced, I think, one out of three times this week.
Right.
They say he practiced okay in the closed practice, but the open practices, we were there, we didn't really see him do anything. So whether he plays or not, but Kenny Stafford might draw, and he's got some playoff experience. But another guy that's here, Darian, that we talked about earlier, could be big, is Manny Arsenault, in that G. Roy Simon ilk, where he didn't get much. You know, Manny likes stats in the regular season, but this might be his money time here today, helping out an injured quarterback.
No question. Manny's, you know, he's primed and he's game for situations like this. This is why Jeremy O'Day brought him in during the offseason for situations that, you know, are tough when you need a guy to show leadership as well as that grit, you know, going into a big game like this. So Manny, he could definitely play a huge role. And back to Shaq, I think he'll be fine. When you're dealing with a toe, you know, you could easily numb a toe and go out there and be productive. So I think you'll see some big plays from Shaq. He's had a great matchup against Rhodes over the past couple of times they played Winnipeg. He's got behind them a lot. So I think you'll see Shaq out there for sure.
Conversely, you know, we talk about offense, we talk about defense, we don't talk a lot about special teams. Kicking is one third of the game, and you watch last week, Justin Medlock nailed a 52-yard field goal, and you'll say, wow, whatever, he's supposed to, he makes $200,000. He's kicking an ice block, Paul Waldo, yeah. And he's made 14 of his last 15 playoff field goals. I'll get a comment from Darren in a second, but just talk about how special teams could be so big today. He's a weapon, John Ryan's a weapon.
Yep.
Like to see how Brett Lowther responds after a bad week here the last time he was on the field.
No, absolutely. I mean, it's a battle of field position, right? I mean, you talk to ask Darian the question. Darian, do you want to start at your own 10-yard line, or do you want to start on the opposition's, you know, 45? And I think working with a short field, I mean, it's one of those things where that's so significant to the game.
Well, and Darian, I'll let you jump in here, but here's an interesting stat. Winnipeg tied for number one for average drive start position at their own 38-yard line, and number one having opponents start at just their own 33-yard line. So in a game like this, this is a battle of field position, and as Paul said, you probably want to play with a short field, especially when you have an injured quarterback like Cody Fajardo.
No question. Field position is going to be huge, huge, and you have to look at Coach O'Shea and his background. It started with special teams.
Right.
He's a guy that's been very creative with faith. You look at Winnipeg this year, they have a number of return touchdowns this season. Right. So he do a great job in special teams. You best believe that Coach O'Shea is in that locker room preaching. You know, if you could get in that lock in range, or you guys get your blocks for our kick returner, he could spring a big one and go to the house. He's known for that. So special teams is definitely huge for the Bombers and the Riders. I mean, you know, especially with the kicker struggling the week before, the end of the season. You know, that's big. You have a young kicker in a game like this. Nerves could be flying around. So, you could see special teams play a huge part in this game.
Yeah, and you know, you make a big point there, because Winnipeg's number two with 13 big play kick returns compared to number seven Saskatchewan with six. Darian, a quick comment about Paul LaPolice and how he can, he's the chef and he can mix all the ingredients and make a beautiful meal. He did it with two different playbooks last week, Kolaros and Streller. When you think about it, it's crazy. Zach Kolaros is only playing his third full game with the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, and it's the West Final.
No question. I mean, we talked about it last week, and you asked me if I thought that Coach Lapo could create something to where Zach could push the ball downfield, and he did just that. I bet when Coach Lapo was up late at night just watching films of the Calgary defense, he saw that if you could half roll to the right side of the field, that boundary corner, you know, he relaxed a little bit, and he felt like Darvin Adams could get behind him. And that's exactly what happened in that game. So Coach Lapo, man, he does a great job at just scheming up ways to create big plays. And, you know, the way he's gotten back up to speed in the past couple weeks is just a tribute to – I mean, I've sat in numerous meetings with this guy, so I know exactly how he's handling Zach, and he's making it so simple for him to pick up on that offense.
Darian Durant, your prediction for today's Western Final, the Riders and the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. Last time the Riders had a Western Final here was 2009. You know that very well, and what it means to play in front of a big crowd and full throat like this. Who do you got in today's game?
This is going to be very unpopular in Rider Nation, but I'm a firm believer in momentum. I believe in fate. I believe in things happening for a reason. I believe in, you know, a bigger picture, and for Zach Kolaros to be able to come back to Regina and play with the possibility of playing Hamilton in the Grey Cup, just the momentum that Winnipeg is carrying right now. All it takes is one game to build confidence and build momentum. I see Winnipeg coming in this afternoon and making it tough on the Riders and pulling out a tight game.
Darian, thanks for this. We appreciate the candid comments, and we'll talk to you a Grey Cup week, okay, my friend?
Sounds good, man. Thanks for having me, guys.
That's a great Darian Durant with his great insight here. You only get him here, right here on your source for Rough Riders football, the Saskatchewan Rough Riders Radio Network, and the Countdown to Kickoff Show. When we come back, it's our Growing the Game feature. We'll talk to a provincial champion football player, Mark Harrison of the Lobolis Golden Suns. We'll talk about the Hilltops and the quest for the Vanier Cup. You're listening to the Countdown to Kickoff Show, brought to you by KFC and Waxy's Bobcat on the Rough Riders Radio Network. And it's time to head out in the Mr. Lube Hotline and speak with one of the great athletes coming up in our province, as we always like to highlight amateur athletes, Mark Harrison, who's not our producer, Mark Harrison. He's Mark Harrison, the grandson of legendary broadcaster here on CKRM, Luke Harrison, who won a provincial championship, or Lauren Harrison, pardon me, who won a provincial championship here with the Lobolis Golden Suns. How are you today, Mark?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Awesome, man. So tell us about the run. It was an undefeated season for the Lobolis Golden Suns.
Yeah, it was a great season for us. We worked hard all year. We were undefeated, and we were able to come out with a provincial championship.
Yeah, man, you sound like your dad. Your dad, Paul, of course, on the coaching staff. He sounds exactly like his dad. What's it like being a receiver on a team where your dad's coaching? Is there a father-son kind of bond, or do you stay away from him because you get enough of him at home?
Well, you know, there's a good bond. He's a great coach, and mm-hmm. I love playing receiver. I love catching the ball, and it's a good time.
What makes Lobolis so powerful year after year? I know it's your first championship, I think, in about 3 years, but what makes Lobolis so powerful? You're always in the mix with John Ford and his team.
It's our coaching staff and the amount of work that we put in on the offseason. We work hard year-round, so it's not just the short 2 or 3 months that we play. We work all year round.
So you win 22-8 over Riffle to win the city championship. Can you tell us a little bit about the provincial final? I wasn't at that game. My son played on Riffle, so obviously he was at the city championship, but I wasn't there the Holy Cross game. Tell us about that game.
Holy Cross was a really good team. They've got some great players, and they gave us a really good game, and it felt really good to be able to come away with the victory. It was hard fought. And
yeah. What's your favorite thing about football, Mark, playing? And do you have aspirations to play after this?
You know, I'm not sure if I'm going to play after this. I'm planning on going to university, possibly here at the U of R. Mm-hmm. But I love the camaraderie and the team feeling.
Yeah, so this guy here, Paul Waldo, was not only a receiver, but he's the school president, too. How was that juggling act, being school president and being involved in a team that you know is always in the mix to win something?
Yeah, you know, it was busy, but my advisors for the Student Government Council really balanced it really well for me and allowed me to get to everything for both.
Awesome, man. Well, congratulations on the championship. I know your grandfather was a staple on this radio station for years, CKRM, Lauren Harrison. So he had that championship flair, and you do too. Congratulations, and enjoy the football game today.
Yeah, perfect. Thanks.
Thanks. That's Mark Harrison joining us in Growing the Game here. Provincial champion with the Lobolis Golden Suns. Shout out to Tom Sargent and the Hilltops. They won again. Their sixth straight title, 11-6 over Langley, BC, so they beat the Langley Rams. And the Calgary Dinos are going to the Vanier Cup against Montreal. That should be an interesting game, too.
You know, getting back to obviously the Lobolis Golden Suns, my alma mater, yeah. I mean, they've obviously set a standard there. And, you know, you want to talk about the Hilltops who just continue to win. And once again, I think it's a culture that's established there. And, you know, the Regina Thunder is getting pretty close. And then obviously the Calgary Dinos. You know, I think they've been destined this year, and things are shaping up for them. So it should be a good one.
All right. Well, we appreciate Mark for joining us. So we got the commissioner coming up here on stage. This is Countdown to Kickoff on the Saskatchewan Rough Riders Radio Network. Well, we don't have Jason Claremont with us. I gave him the day off because not often do you get the commissioner to come on your
man.
Set, but he is here as our show, Countdown to Kickoff, brought to you by KFC. We're at Harvard Studios 620. The commissioner, Randy Ambrosi, joining Paul Waldo and yours truly, Michael Ball. Commission, thanks for coming in.
Great to be here.
Appreciate it. You never age. What's your secret?
I know, right?
Oh, I think there's a lot of good makeup. And okay. No, but, you know, it's seriously just an honor to be here. Super excited to be in Regina for a playoff game. It's going to be a rocking good house today.
Yeah, and as a Prairie boy, it's nice to be here November 17th, and it's +4.
Yeah, pretty nice. Yeah. Great for the fans. This is going to be a special day for football.
You know, Winnipeg guy, but we got Winnipeg and Saskatchewan. Like this is going to be an old-fashioned Prairie slobber knocker, I think.
Well, you kind of like it when the teams don't like each other.
Yeah,
and these
sure.
two teams, I think we can qualify in that category.
Yep.
They've got quite a history, but again, sets it up for a beautiful game.
I know it's a 9-team league, so it's maybe bound to happen, but you got the team that's hosting the Grey Cup next next year here at the West Final, and you get the team the following year hosting the Grey Cup, hosting the East Final. Looks nice to see. I know two rabid fan bases. Hamilton gets great support, but it's great to see sold out, and they're really into it over there.
Yeah, you know, just Hamilton has done a great job building that franchise, and you know, really much like you've done here in Saskatchewan with the Riders, really building that community around the team. You know, everywhere you go in Hamilton, and frankly, the surrounding area. It's big Ticat country, and it just didn't just happen.
Yeah.
Like here, they worked hard at it, you know, to earn a loyal fan base like the Riders have.
Yeah, for sure. Now, as we get set for the Western Final, your thoughts so far and what you've seen this year from the league in terms of, let's say, quality of play.
Well, you know,
in a year where we had so many, all the quarterbacks go down, all the starting quarterbacks go down. The play's been pretty exciting.
Well, I think it's actually been an exceptional year, and now you see this emergence of this new young group of quarterbacks that, frankly, you know, Cody Fajardo and Vernon Adams in Montreal, you'll see these players, I think, will be with us in this league, you know, in entertaining the fans for the next 5 to 10 years.
Yep.
And that's pretty encouraging and exciting.
Yeah. What do you think as a commissioner to have... I mean, there's lots of great people in this league, Steinauer, Dane Evans, but to have a guy like Cody Fajardo that's so personable in arguably the mecca of football in the CFL, the heartland of football, and you got a guy like Craig Dickinson. I've never been around two guys in this league more human.
Yeah.
Like, right. And by that I mean, they're just, like, the last time we had a game here, Dickinson's walking by home to his house in downtown Regina. I tell him to come in, and he comes in, and he talks unsolicited for 10 minutes about anything. I mean, you need more of those guys in the league, and you need to market more of those guys in the league.
And add to it Jeremy O'Day, and add to it Craig Reynolds, and frankly, the whole Rider organization. And I think they are literally synchronized with the heartbeat of this province and of this fan base. Couldn't ask for a better situation.
So let me ask you this. Every starting quarterback went down, okay? Does that make you as a league revisit the idea of having two quarterbacks on the roster next year?
Well, you know, there's nothing that prevents teams from having more than two quarterbacks.
Right.
Dressing them in a game, they won't be able to do. But teams are having that third quarterback on their roster. I'm not as concerned about it as people might think I am. But I go back to, you always have to end the season, take a step back, and visit on, did you get it right? And right. So in the moment, we thought that was the right decision. But hey, you're asking the right question. You know, could the volatility around the QB role in terms of injuries cause us to reflect on that? Sure, we should.
Yeah.
Are we going to rush out to make an immediate change? Not necessarily, but we definitely should talk about it.
In terms of the padded practices, I know you switched midway through. You switched that mentality, and you said, hey, we're going to go in conjunction with the league. We're going to go with not as many padded practices. How have you found that? Have you done a retake on that? Have you been monitoring that and what the coaches think? And does that have anything to do with more injuries, less injuries, quality of play?
Well, you know, I'm really encouraged by it. We've seen a reduction in practice injuries down by 30%. And if I look at all of these amazing fans in the room here and across the province today and across the country, our best fans want our best players playing.
Of course.
You can find ways for them not to get injured unnecessarily, especially practices, for example, then we should do that. I do think we had to challenge our coaches to find ways to get their players prepared in a different way than they might have before. But that's maybe one of the best outcomes of this, is this group of coaches who I think are really leaders in our game are now kind of reinventing the way they're training and developing the players, the way they're practicing, and that's good for the game of football because we have to make the game safer. I think our league is leading the way in that effort. So for the moment, I think it's doing right. It definitely caused the coaches a lot of heartburn and anxiety, but I think in terms of the injury profile outcome, the right thing to do.
Lots to ask you. We're going to take a break and come back in a second. But before we go to break, so I look around and I see, like, Ray Elgar jersey, and I see George Reed jersey, and I see Ron Lancaster jersey, and Newman, and Wes Cates, and that's great, and that is great. But I'd like to see more Fajardo. I'd like to see, you know, more of those kind of jerseys. Are you concerned at all by, and I know it's not just you, it comes to the league, these one-year contracts where there's never, like people don't know who to put on the back of their jersey because they can't identify with the Randy Ambrosi that plays with the team for 5 years or the Wes Cates. Because to me, that's a bit of a concern when you're trying to build up excitement in a market, maybe like a Toronto or a BC or something like that.
Yeah, you know, it is something we have definitely talked about. Look, I think the best thing we could do is find as many ways to create continuity on our rosters as we can. This is something we have to continue to look at and find a way. You know, in part the answer here lies in this is just such a great place to play. Mm-hmm. I think the players come here and fall in love with being, you know, part of this organization, being part of the city, being part of the province. I think that creates a natural attraction to want to be here and want to stay. I think playing for, you know, Coach Dickinson is a factor. But should, and ultimately over time, should we look at the way we do our contracts? And it's not a discussion for today, but one that I think we should definitely have going forward. Because what I'm finding with our players and the Players Association is they want to talk about these things. You know, we don't always agree, but they definitely are willing to sit down and have that discussion. And I think it's one that we should continue to have into the future.
All right, we'll get more with Commissioner Ambrosi in a minute. Paul Waldo-Balzi with you here. We're on set, Harvard Studio 620. More with the great Commissioner of the Canadian Football League in a moment on the Saskatchewan Rough Riders Radio Network. And welcome back here to Harvard Studio 620, Mosaic Stadium. We jumping today, the Saskatchewan Rough Riders and the Winnipeg Blue Bombers for only the third time ever in modern football in a West Final. 72, the Riders won in Winnipeg, 66. It was a three-game series, Randy Ambrosi, which is hard to believe. Yep. They played it 3 days apart, and the Riders would win that. It's the only time the Riders have finished first and won a Grey Cup in the same season, so we're kind of hoping here at least that the Rough Riders can do that. Hey, you're a sports fan. You're a commissioner. I wanted to ask you this, but I knew you were coming here. Didn't know it was going to happen on Monday night. The Cleveland Browns' Myles Garrett hits the quarterback Mason Rudolph over the head with his own helmet. Thank God it was the padded part, because if it would have been the crown, he might be in jail. As a commissioner watching that or seeing that, who's in the same state as Roger Goodell, what's running through your mind? Are you intrigued to see what Roger's going to do? And are you just praying something like that doesn't happen in your league?
Well, you know, I have to say, I think that they did the right thing. I mean, they've obviously handed down a very heavy suspension. There's no room in that in this game for that at all. I mean, look, the game is rough enough on the players. There's enough ways for, you know, players to have injuries without that kind of craziness going on. So all I can say is congratulations to the NFL for handling their business in the right way, because the players, they know it's not part of the game, but it sends a sobering reminder that's not what sports is all about.
I've been watching their replay for pass interference because they've adopted what you guys had. You were ahead of it, but they seem to, like, I think they only have like a 13% turnover rate. Mm-hmm. It's almost like they don't want to admit their refs were wrong. It's interesting, though, how it's as long as you get the call right, that seems to be the mentality here in this league, which I do like.
Yeah, you know, this year, I feel like we've made our biggest and best step forward with this clear and obvious standard. Look, I don't think the fans are interested in us spending half an hour trying to analyze the film down to the nanosecond what happened.
Right.
They want to know that if it was the wrong call, it was the wrong call, and it was clear and it was obvious. Let's correct those ones. That has made our command center far more efficient. I think we've gotten that a lot right. I'll tell you one of the other things the fans might not know, but one of the things that the league office does is every week following the weekend's games, they prepare a report explaining the command center decisions, explaining it against the clear and obvious standard. And we've had a couple of occasions this year where we've acknowledged to the teams that we've made a mistake, that we didn't follow the standard. And I think it's actually created a better environment within the league. The teams can trust us. And Greg Dick, who runs football ops for us, he's done one thing better, and I feel good about it, is Greg is not trying to say we're right 100% of the time. Yeah. He's not afraid to admit when we make a mistake. I actually think that's helping us with our relationship with the teams.
Okay, so how have you got the next wave of fans how you want to engage? And I watch football, Paul, as you do. I'm older than you, but I watch it. Like, I figure if you bought a ticket, you're in your seat. That's where you are. So I'll tune in a Blue Bombers game. Like, Well, nobody's at the game. Like, they're a good team. Are they turned off? Are they onto the Jets? But they're in the rum hut.
Yeah.
Here they're at Pilsner Place. But how are you engaging your younger fans? Is it church today? Now, this is a small sample size, but most of the people came, they're wearing their Rider jerseys, but they're my age or older. How are you engaging your younger fans? Because, you know, that's who's paying the rent coming up here.
Yeah, I think part of it is just acknowledging that they want to watch the game differently. Their experience is different than what the traditional fan was. And you know what? I think these stadiums here, as you just described, Pill Country, Winnipeg is the rum hut, Ottawa is the biggest bar rail.
Yeah.
And you know, frankly, that's okay. If Hamilton, by the way, they're playing in front of a sold out stadium today.
Yep.
But oftentimes during a game, you'll see lots of empty seats. But if you go into the concourse,
yep,
they've got several bars back
right
there, and the bars are packed to capacity. Look, I think this is what our teams have done really well, is acknowledging that this next generation of fans are not necessarily going to watch it the same
mm-hmm
way, and then finding solutions to give them an experience that they can enjoy their way, and I'm excited about that. Look, I still wish I could kind of get everybody into the seats, but that's how I think about watching it, the way I like to watch a game. But, hey, let's just play to this next generation, get them into our stadiums, because once they fall in love with this game, they'll be in love with it for a long time.
This guy played in Montreal when it was hot, 3 Grey Cups in however many years, or two with Montreal, one here, but he was always around. They had great crowd support. Looks like maybe they're going back to that, which is great with Kahari Jones. But when can we expect something in terms of you guys not owning that team anymore?
Yeah, you know, we have been engaged in a remarkable set of ongoing discussions, and it continues. Look, the message from my governors all the way through was, it's not to get it done fast, but to get it done right. Because we don't want to get this team set up for the next 2 years, get them set up for the next decade or longer. So you got to get the right group. You have to look at their business plans. You have to challenge their plans.
Right.
They have to challenge ours. Because, in the end, we are looking for a great fit and one that will sustain us for the long haul. And what we proved in Montreal this year, and you know, you played there, you know, it's a great football province, and they love their football kind of like they love it here.
Yeah.
And the fans started to come back, because you know what? And they didn't go 14-4. They
sure
were a 10-9 team, 10-8 team.
Yeah,
10-8 team, and yet that fan base, they had 21,000 fans. The fans are passionate. They're enjoying their football. They will come back.
Yep.
But they want to know that the owners are committed to the future. That's what's taking time.
A concern for me is supporting our own. I know you're Canadian, so I'm assuming that's on your agenda. We talked on a couple of occasions, or a couple times ago, about the Vanier Cup. I had to scramble to find the Can-West game. I know that's not your problem. I got on CBC.ca, and thank God they've come forward. They're going to cover the Vanier Cup. But in terms of the CFL's relationship with U Sports and bringing the Vanier Cup under one umbrella, like they did, I think the last time was 2012, where we actually have the game paired up with the Grey Cup. I think next year would be perfect here, 2020, right here in the heartland of football.
Well, in fact, it has been a big active discussion. We've been spending a lot of time with U Sports. This is one of our goals. So in fact, I was just with our lead governors on Thursday in Toronto, and we talked about this as a model. We're working with U Sports to do that. I think it'd be good for football, be good for the future of football in Canada to bring those two championship games together on one weekend. You know, we are working our way towards that goal, and a closer relationship with U Sports. Frankly, a relationship I need to get going on is with junior football as well, because they're also going to be great partners in this process. But
junior football player here, Andrew Harris. I mean, there's a lot of good stars. Evans, Dan Clark.
Yeah.
I had a couple fans come to me and say, "What, the league really put a lot into that Mexican combine and they really jazzed it up, but they don't do so much for the Canadian draft." Like, here's something I'd like to see. I'd like to see Randy Ambrosi at the Casino Regina for the first round of the draft. There's only 9, I get it, but or the first couple of rounds, paper the place, have people in different jerseys, and make it an event. So because it's not a big deal unless you make it a big deal. You know what I'm saying?
You know, it's I couldn't agree with you more, by the way, but if you're going to be really practical, here's what's happened.
Yep.
Football in Canada, and I think the people in this room and on your listening network and most CFL fans understand how good CFL players are. Yeah. And they are world-class athletes, right. And they are playing this game as well or better than it's ever been played before.
Right,
right.
But the problem we've got today is that our Canadian kids are so good, they're often being tempted to go to the NFL.
Sure.
Yeah.
And many of our first-round draft picks,
yeah,
the night we draft them, they're also kind of waiting to be signed by NFL teams. And that's creating a problem for us because the players are too darn good, and they're being attracted to the NFL for, you know, for a chance at a spot on an NFL roster. Look, I just think I'd like to see a day where our first, second, and third round is as big an event as any draft in the world.
Yeah.
And I think there's a way to overcome this problem. Part of it is let's grow this league. Let's make this league bigger and stronger. I've been talking with our players. I want to find a formula for our players to do better. I want to see a day where our players are making more money. I want to see a day when our coaches are making more money. I want to grow this thing to the point where it is so hard to turn away from a Canadian Football League opportunity that this becomes the first choice for everyone. And then I think we'll get to that day where the draft can be as big an event as you're describing.
Thanks for this, Randy. And last question before we go here. I'm not asking you for a winner because you're the commissioner, but what do you hope to see from this game?
You know, I say this all the time. First of all, I feel like when I'm in a home stadium, who doesn't want the home team to win? Because home stadium fans go home happier when they win. So I'm here today.
Yeah.
Secondly, I think I like 36-36. With 48 seconds left to go in the game, and then you know what? I'll let the fate decide which way it goes. But I'd like to see a great game for these fans, entertain the heck out of them. I have a pretty good feeling. If I ask just by a show of hands who would like to see the Riders win today, I think I'm getting a pretty good response here.
Yeah.
But I just want to see a great football game, and again, continue to make the point how good the Canadian Football League, actually how great it is.
Thanks, Randy. Appreciate it, man. Always appreciate you coming by. Randy Ambrosi, most accessible commissioner in all of sports. Okay,
totally.
Time now for our extra point. Okay, Paul, we're short on time here, my friend, so you give me your prediction and why.
Okay, am I predicting with my heart or am I predicting with my gut? My heart
tells me. Well, you got 30 seconds. So.
I know. Unfortunately, I just think with the way the circumstances are, I can see this going not the way I want it to go. A close game, but I think the ugly guys could potentially pull it out by a score, maybe 3 or 4.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I said it all week. If Cody was healthy, I'd pick the Riders, no-brainer. I say Winnipeg 22-17. I hope I'm wrong. I pray I'm wrong.
Me too.
Be nice to see a 30th anniversary Riders Hamilton. Right now, Tiger Cats leading 28-13. Thanks for this, Paul.
Oh,
I appreciate
you,
man.
Always
we'll talk to you next week for
you
sure. After the game, I'll be joined by Mike McCullough for our roundtable. Hopefully, we're talking about a Rough Riders victory. But up next, we're up to the broadcast booth with Derek and Luke. We'll talk to you after the game.